Paula Kaplan was introduced before, but I'll again say PhD, author of They Say You're Crazy, How the World's Most Powerful Psychiatrists Decide Who's Normal. I love when she countered their attempt to have premenstrual dysphoric disorder with something about testosterone-based aggressive disorder, and the APA adjourned to the Freud room and voted her diagnosis down. The Myth of Women's Masochism, and also third, Don't Blame Mother, and she has a new book out she'll tell you about, an activist against the harm caused by psychiatric labels. Dr. Kaplan has been a full professor of psychology, assistant professor of psychiatry, and lecturer in women's studies at the University of Toronto, and was chosen by the American Psychological Association as an eminent woman psychologist. A clinical and research psychologist, she was formerly a consultant right in the middle of the construction of the DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, so she saw it from the inside. And Paula now lives in Cambridge, Massachusetts. So welcome, Paula.
I am an activist. I try, anyway. And I didn't start out that way. But when I was teaching graduate students at the University of Toronto, I taught the DSM as an advocate because my teachers had told me this is a scientifically grounded document. And I said, isn't it wonderful? They've put together all the science, and here we have this compendium of it. And then when I'd written The Myth of Women's Masochism, Jean Baker Miller called me and told me that the DSM folks were trying to put masochistic personality disorder in the manual along with premenstrual dysphoric disorder and some others. And so I went to their meeting, and I was telling Bob about this morning. I walked into the APA headquarters in D.C., and I thought, I knew that people on the DSM committee were people whose works I had read in graduate school. They were the experts. And I love to learn from people, and I thought, I'll go in, I'll say my piece, then they will explain to me what I was not aware of. What did I miss? And I thought, well, I'll learn something. And what I learned was that there is an appalling lack of not only scientific evaluation, but clear logical thinking, not to mention humanity, in the DSM folks. I could not have made it up. And so I got involved in organizing a petition drive against these new proposed diagnoses. And then they put them in anyway, of course. And when DSM-3R came out, I called Alan Francis, who was going to be head of DSM-4, and I said, listen, my graduate students and I are going to be looking at the new research as it comes out on these categories, which had been put in a provisional appendix for categories requiring further study. They didn't say in there, don't use them, because there's no proof they even exist, but they put them in there. And I said, so we thought maybe instead of doing duplicating work, how about if, as we find articles and we write reviews of the literature, we send them to you, and your committee can send yours to us, and so on. He said, well, I got a better idea. Why don't you join our two committees on these categories as a consultant? And I said, well, I'd be glad to do that, but I think I should warn you what my position is. Oh, I know what it is, he said. And then listen to his wording. He said, but this time, the decisions about the DSM are going to be based on the science. And he said, and this time, we want to hear from a wide range of people with different perspectives. And I thought, well, that sounds great. I said to him, however, I just should mention that if I'm not comfortable with what happens, I will have to resign, and I will feel free to speak about it publicly. And that's what happened. They wouldn't tell me when their meetings were. They wouldn't tell me when they wanted input from us. They would send me papers that they had written and say, we want your feedback by, and it was a date 3 weeks past. It could not have been a more bizarre experience. So I thought, whoa, here I am. I was teaching this stuff, and I had no idea. And it's a scandal, and people need to be aware. So that's when I wrote They Say You're Crazy, How the World's Most Powerful Psychiatrists Decide Who's Normal. And by the way, my publisher called me right before it came out and said, we'd like to put this thing on the cover. It's, see the little gold sunburst, and it says the inside story of the DSM, because they said Barnes & Noble or Borders or one of the big ones said if we'll put that on there, they will display it right by the DSM. Guess what? We put it on there, and they didn't. But they do carry the DSM, but I don't think my book is even in their stores anymore. So When that book came out, one of the things that happened was I was contacted by John Cole, who was one of the lawyers involved in the tobacco lawsuits on the good side, and he said to me they were suing. This was the lawsuit you may have heard about. They were suing Chad and the APA because of the DSM and. Oh, what was the other? Oh, and Novartis. It was a Ritalin and ADD lawsuit. Well, that lawsuit went nowhere for reasons I don't have time to go into. But one of the lawyers working with him met with me for hours, and she said the following thing to me. She said, now, you're telling me that, for example, premenstrual dysphoric disorder, what the science showed was there was no evidence that it was a real entity. And I said, that's right, there was no evidence there was a real entity. And there was a study that was done that came as close as you can to proving something doesn't exist. So they gave the criteria for premenstrual dysphoric disorder on a checklist to three groups of people, and they said, fill them out every day for 2 months and bring them back, which is how you're supposed to diagnose PMDD, according to the manual. And so the people they gave these lists to were women who said they had PMDD or their doctors had diagnosed in that way, women who said, I've never had any premenstrual problems, and men. Now, if there's such a thing as PMDD, and the DSM people have correctly identified its criteria, of course, they're going to respond very differently. There were virtually no differences. The DSM people knew that, and they put it in the next edition of the manual anyway. So this lawyer said to me, so if you're telling me that these are not entities that have been shown to be real, then if I come to see a therapist and they give me one of those labels, and if they choose any treatment, even no treatment, on that basis, then they're subjecting me to experimental treatment without my knowledge or consent. And I said, oh my God, yes, I never thought of it that way. And I said, not only that though, but most therapists are doing that without realizing that that's what they're doing because, like me, they were taught that the DSM is scientific. So after I did that, my kids had left home, and I went back to theater, which I had been involved in as a kid, and I ended up writing a play called Call Me Crazy, which is a comedy drama, because I wanted to use that method to try to get the word out as well about what really goes on. And then I ended up editing this new book, which is called Bias in Psychiatric Diagnosis. And that was sort of the offspring of They Say You're Crazy, because the longer I worked in this field, the more I saw people who had been damaged in various ways by being diagnosed. Now, yes, the drug problems are enormous, and I would never minimize those. But what I started hearing were stories about people whose lives had been destroyed just because of getting a diagnosis. They had lost custody of children because of being diagnosed. This one isn't even in the DSM, with parental alienation syndrome, because they said, oh my God, I think my ex-husband may be abusing my children. And so by virtue of having said that, she is diagnosed as trying to turn the children against their father. I learned that you can be deprived of health insurance or have skyrocketing premiums just because you have a label from the DSM, because now you have a pre-existing condition. You can be deprived of the right to make, as you know, legal and medical decisions about your life, and on and on and on. And what I also started to see more and more were the ways that the image I have is that when you have this enterprise of diagnosis, you take science out of it, and it leaves an enormous vacuum into which, of course, all kinds of biases go. Because when we don't have the science to rely on, then any prejudices we have go into making decisions about who is mentally ill. So I got together this dream group of authors who are experts on an enormous variety of issues having to do with bias. And I want to just tell you, just to give you a sense of the range of biases that we have found. Meadow Linder was a student at Brown, an undergraduate who got access to the DSM archives, and wrote about how they came up with the diagnosis of post-traumatic stress disorder, which even if you like that category, it's just very instructive about how they make their decisions. We have some chapters about the legal implications of bias in psychiatric diagnosis, and then we have various kinds of bias, chapters on them, several about racism, several about sexism, ageism at both ends of the age spectrum. Louise Armstrong wrote The Psychiatric Policing of Children, and Rochelle Siegel about ageism in psychiatric diagnosis, about classism, homophobia and heterosexism, and so on, and rural women, mislabeling psychiatrically of rural women. And then we have specific chapters about specific labels. Jeffrey Poland's chapter on schizophrenia is amazing because when I was in graduate school, you know, we learned that it was biologically, first of all, the implicit thing was it exists. Secondly, it's a biologically based thing. Third, we know that because there are all these twin studies and gene studies, and boy, that sounded compelling. And he, as other people have done, just rips that to shreds. In fact, he says, the very label schizophrenia is a bias because it doesn't exist. It's never been shown to exist. And so just its existence is a bias, or the existence of the label is a bias. So specific categories, and then about the future, some chapters about moving ahead. One of the chapters I want to mention just briefly that's in there is by Wes Proffitt, who is a clinical psychologist and also just finished law school. He's African American. He worked in the prison system for many years. And I called Wes and I said, we're doing this book. Is there anything you feel is important to write about? And he said, well, you know, in preparation for doing DSM-5, they've appointed a committee to discuss the question of whether DSM-5 should include racism as a psychiatric diagnosis. I know, isn't that shocking? Isn't that shocking? So we might as well get rid of hate crime legislation, because by virtue of committing a hate crime, you prove that you're mentally ill with the diagnostic category of racism. And that, of course, is one of the things that is so terrifying about the proliferation of psychiatric diagnoses, that all kinds of major social and political evils get covered up because the people who are harmed by these evils are diagnosed as having these intrapsychic individual disorders and then usually sent away or put on medication because of that. I have to wrap this up, so let me just talk a little bit about activism. There are a number of things that I've been trying to do, and mostly based on what I've learned in doing the books. One is that as a teacher in colleges and universities, every time I teach a course, no matter where it is, including at this law school, at least by the time at the end of the semester comes, I have found out directly from the people themselves that a third of the students, at least, have come there psychiatrically diagnosed and on psychotropic medication. And in every group of 20 or 25 people, I have learned about at least one who's on 6 at a time. So we're doing symposia at various conferences talking about why that is, what to do about it, how scary it is. Secondly, I have started this initiative to issued a call for congressional hearings about psychiatric diagnosis, not just about the DSM, but about even the others as well, to try to put this on the national public agenda, to say it's a problem, to say, yes, the drugs are real problems as well, but look at what happens even without the drugs, and to brainstorm about ways to solve these problems and protect people. Also, when I wrote They Say You're Crazy, I used to be a debater, and I documented in excruciating detail everything I said about how people put the DSM together. I said it should be called Diagnosis Gate because of the way that they deal with the science. They ignore it, they distort it, or I even use the word lie, and I have not been sued because they know it's the truth. I wrote this with lawyers in mind and people that they would represent so that they don't have to pull together all the documentation to show that people are being diagnosed with labels for entities that have not been shown to exist, and then they're suffering harm because of that. If there's anybody here who is a lawyer or who wants to, yes, I know, and who knows people who've been harmed, not by having therapists abuse them, and not necessarily by medication, but I want lawsuits to go against the APA for publishing the DSM with these categories and against specific professionals who use them. Because professionals, even if they don't know, they're supposed to know. You should be able to trust when you go see somebody with an MD or a PhD that they really have looked into whether or not there's science behind what they're doing. And you can go to the website that Jim Gottstein graciously created that's called Psych Diagnosis, PsychDiagnosis.net, and you can sign on, or your group can sign on there as an endorser. There are more than 50 stories on that website that of people, some of them here, who generously told us their stories about being harmed by diagnosis. And I would urge you, we're going to put the press release on that website in the next few days. I would urge you to go on, take the press release, send it to everybody you can think of, especially media people, especially legislators, because we want to have the hearings happen. So I'm going to stop there. Thank you very much.